Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to the Castobrus podcast with a K, available on castobrus.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audio Boo. On this week's podcast, it's Christian Corley, editor of the show. That's me speaking. Hello. And also, James McLean. How are you, James?
I'm good, thank you. It's twice you've asked me. It's more than twice you normally ask me. No, you know, you normally ask me once, so twice is still an extra 100% more, I guess.
Okay.
So 200%.
You do like to be asked how you are, don't you?
I do, don't I? I'm in a bit of a funny mood. I think whether it's some sort of drug. This weekend, I've been slightly oddly hyper. I did a podcast yesterday, and I was
okay. Who with?
It was two guys from a website called We Came From The Basement, who is Canadians, who mm-hmm. Do a sort of film podcast website. A colleague, Troy, and Lance Henriksen was there as well. And I was just a bit of a dick all the way through. I was sort of challenging America and Canada in the same way I suppose I challenged the North for you. Nice. And, you know, it's wow. Like, I don't know, it's just in a nice way.
Yeah.
But as I said at the time, you know, just being an arse, really. But if you do it with a British accent, sometimes you just get away with it and people laugh with you. And you think, no, actually, I'm actually just being an arse, but you're letting me. It's cool. I'm going to do it again. So it's been that sort of thing. So I'm probably going to be a bit like today. I don't know. How are you, Terranova?
I am in a much better mood than you were. No, I'm good. I am swell. I've got no. I don't know.
You're swell.
Nothing to gripe about. I'm swell.
You're swell. Is it good? Is it good living in 1956?
it's amazing. Everybody's nice to you.
Yeah.
Have you got one of those robots of the
so
future in your kitchen?
What's that?
Have you got one of those robots of the future in your kitchen?
Oh, I love
not yet,
those
but
things.
I saw one on the television the other day.
And
I know it's coming.
I love it when you get those old magazines and they show you the things the future like. I remember looking at one recently where it was a helicopter which was stored in the garage. You'd open your garage, you get your helicopter out and you go off to work. And it's just those, you know, that's how it was going to be from the 50s, looking at 30, 40 years time. And I suppose if you're rich, that's true.
Did either of you guys have the action man with the power copter on the back that you'd squeeze and the blades would go around?
I'm not sure. I was always a little nervous about my action man because he looks so decidedly shifty. Those eyes and that permanent posture, that articulated posture of being broken, crushed by a car that sort of just never quite, no matter how you angled him, he always looked sort of slightly beaten. And
yeah.
I think mine had an eye you could look through at the back. No, that might be my $6 million man.
Yeah, yeah.
Bionic, the Bionic Man. Oh,
we were the Bionic Man, weren't we, in the UK? Because he had dollars in the name. So, oh, that won't mean anything to anyone in the UK. Let's call him the Bionic Man.
Because kids are just full of bionic stuff. They know all about bionics, but dollars? No way. We're totally beyond
that. Well,
that
happened a lot in the 70s as well, because there was Boss Cat, Top Cat, wasn't there?
Action Man, G.I. Joe.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, we're here to talk about Doctor Who, mainly. And,
yeah.
and
are we?
Ryan.
Okay.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, apparently. It says that on the show notes.
Oh, right, yeah.
And at the top of the website above there where the listener's reading. Unless they're on Audio Boo. Hello. Or Stitcher.com. Hello. We've already done this in the intro, but yeah. Hello, anyway. So, the teaser trailer. Now, Brian missed our discussion about Lanzarote last week, as he was not here. It was just...
I don't remember it. I probably wasn't listening to us.
Okay, that's fair enough. And so we've had a new teaser trailer, haven't we, of Peter Capaldi's silhouette. We don't even know it's Peter Capaldi. It could be just some midget in a coat.
Why do you assume it's a midget? Or a small person, perhaps?
Well, I don't know how tall he is. He could be 7 foot tall.
Okay, yeah.
But
it's
the low angle.
On.
It's the low angle. So
I see. Right.
Whoever it is could be any height you please.
I see.
Really.
That's good. That's a good comeback.
So good
save. Good
Brian,
save,
have you seen that?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, what did you think? Did it tease you?
You know, honestly, it was nice to know around about time when it's coming back, even though we had kind of guessed that. It was really nice for that. It was nice to just get a little bit of a glimpse. And as it did, as a teaser should, it got me a little bit excited, like, wow, that's only 2 months away, you know? So, yeah, it did pretty well for me. It wasn't anything spectacular, but it got me like motivated again. So that's cool.
Okay. That's you're motivated. Brian's motivated, everyone.
I am Fear. Motivated.
James, how do you feel about the teaser trailer?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was great because I was really in the need for a good big yawn and I couldn't find a reason to do it. And then this trailer came along and there it came. It just sort of rumbled up from underneath and out my mouth. Oh. It was boring. I mean, it looked good. I mean, I stupidness aside, it looked very, you know, the way it was shot, it was very impressive. But sort of it's what we call in contemporary pop culture Revenge of the Sith syndrome. Where, you know, lightsaber is cool, but by the time you get to the end of a film where you've had 20 lightsaber battles, the lightsaber's boring. And that console set has exploded and fired and whatever so many times that it just lacks impact now. And so to see a sort of shot with this sort of fiery background and this silhouette of either a small person or Capaldi, depending on which source you go by, us or Digital Spy, you know, decide which is which, I don't know. It just didn't do anything for me. It just felt like, oh, God's sake, you know, exploding TARDIS again.
Would the Nymon sound effect have helped for you?
Yeah, I think that would have actually given it a bit of a... given it. Well, I think quite seriously, because it's, you know, we get these sort of serious trailers for Regenerations and you know, starts of series. In a sense, you kind of feel like it would just give it something different. It's just like, you know, how many times has the pyro's got to go off on that set? And, you know, to the point where, you know, you just make it boring.
I actually think it would have been a lot better if they had the sound effects from... oh, that's exactly what we were talking about, the Horns of Nyman one. Yes, yes, I do want that. My goodness.
Okay, Internet, you need to make that happen.
Yes, someone will, I'm sure. Yeah, on YouTube. Come on, let's have it.
Okay, so Doctor Who is returning in August, as we know, and recently they've returned from Lanzarote. There's a lot of speculation about what they're doing in Lanzarote. They're obviously filming Doctor Who, but Stephen Moffat made it sound as if it was a sequel to a previous adventure.
Planet of Fire?
The obvious one would be Planet of Fire, yeah. But there's also people who were thinking that it might have been that other famous volcano adventure by James Moran.
Yeah.
Fires of Pompeii. Then we've got that whole thing that Moffat said about there being a reason for the Doctor having the same appearance as Sicilius. Mm. How do you feel about that, guys? Do you think this... I personally don't think it's Fires of Pompeii, but I'll get back to you what I think it is. But what do you think?
I still just don't think they even need to bother doing that. I'm just hoping that the episode doesn't start by the Doctor and Clara going to Lanzarote, whichever one you want to say, only to go to an alien planet that looks amazingly exactly like it.
That's, you that's mean like Planet Fire?
Yeah, that's all I want. You know, that's all I want to see.
I must admit, it does always make me laugh with Planet of Fire, because you kind of think, surely you could have done something for Planet of Fire on a production block in the UK before going over, or even done two stories where one was done in Lanzarote but the rest of it was not, and then the Planet of Fire where Lanzarote was used for the out for the future. It was kind of funny. I don't know. I suppose I don't mind. Again, I suppose it just depends on how it's done. I mean, you can have a story with no clever connections and no great locations and it can be wonderful. You can have ones with great locations, it can be crap, or you can have things like City of Death, which manages to do well on both counts. So
okay,
I well, think I'll we just have what, to I've, wait and see what
I've
do you think
this
then?
A bit of thought. Okay,
okay,
looking at the screen, the shots that we've had the spacesuit. Okay,
yeah,
we've got the casting of Hermione Norris, who is she's a little haughty.
Right.
She's a little posh. And I think that the location of a previous adventure is Mars.
Right.
We had the Ice Warriors last year in Series 7. They've got to come back. They need to reuse that suit a bit. So I think they're on Mars. That's where I think they are.
Wait, so I'm sorry. I may have missed something, but they made an announcement that there was an adventure on a previous...
Yeah, when they said they were going back to Lanzarote... Moffat said that the Doctor, he didn't say that the production team or the latest actor to play the Doctor, he said the Doctor is returning to location of a previous adventure.
Okay, I did miss that part.
I mean, of course, it could be a very sly context of sort of saying, yes, he's been to Lanzarote before.
Yes, it could be. It better not be. But no, I think they've gone to Mars. I think we've got Ice Warriors.
But there's been no definite confirmation of Ice Warriors this next series.
No.
So it is largely
expected. And they did just give them to us the series before, which, you know, that doesn't stop them or hasn't stopped them before. But, I mean, do they really want to bring something back so soon?
Well, I think they should. I think we need lots of Ice Warriors. And we need conquesting Ice Warriors. We need Ice Warriors that are kick-ass. That Ice Warrior was kick-ass, but then he got he went a bit, you know, his friends turned up and picked him up. He sort of chilled out and I'm not going to kill you now, actually.
I would like to see something a little more like Seeds of Death, I must admit. That's got sort of lumbering... a lumbering warriors round corridor. That sort of thing would be kind of cool. I mean, it does affect. The only problem is that you can see it going down the suffering the alien effect. You know, where the alien in Alien is horrendously dangerous, and yet in Aliens, okay, I know they've got large amounts of artillery, but you know, suddenly one alien becomes less threatening than the one in the previous film. So in a sense. Like with Dalek, I suppose, and Parting of the Ways. Although I think Parting of the Ways actually did a pretty good job of keeping the Daleks pretty invincible.
I think it did, yeah.
That's my only worry is that will they end up weakening the Ice Warriors by having more Ice Warriors if they have Ice Warriors? I wouldn't mind Mars. I think Mars would be... I think, especially with Water of Mars, sort of things about Mars that you could build a nice bit of texture.
Estate? And all right,
texture,
sorry.
Yes, real estate texture. you could start building a new series feeling for Mars, sort of that there's lots of ideas and things bouncing off there, and
it needs to be done. Mars is it's as far as New Who's concerned, it's a blank canvas, and so many possibilities with that planet. So let's embrace them, production team. I hope I'm right. Brian, James. Have you ever fancied spending £800 on a reel of acetate film of classic Doctor Who?
Nope.
No. Well, that's because he wants to buy an £800 sonic screwdriver. Where's he going to get the £800 for?
Exactly. Because you know why?
Priorities.
I should buy a DVD that has that same adventure on it for much less. And then I wouldn't be able to have that sonic screwdriver if I had that film reel. Plus... I've got no way to play that film reel.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, you might have to spend £800 on a compatible projector.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, over the weekend, a guy called Telefan Ian, who's got a very good feedback rating on eBay, was listing twice. He listed it, then took it down and listed it again. His £800 a single Doctor Who episode. It's either episode 3 or episode 6, I forget, from The Wheel in Space from 1968, which is quite an odd thing to put on eBay. Now, before I noticed from the Facebook comments that people weren't reading the article. This isn't a missing episode. This is one that the BBC already has. It is episode 3 that is for sale. Starting bid is £799. And it has no bids as yet. Is anyone surprised that it has no bids as yet?
Not really.
No, it is a lot of money for...
I mean, it's not. If it was the obviously...
It's not a specialist market for films, is it, eBay?
No, and it's not. I mean, while it is in its sense slightly specialist, it's not unique, nor is it original. It's not. It's not, you know, if it was an original canister or something, or if it was... somehow unique, but I mean,
if it was unique, I think you'd probably expect it about 10 times.
Absolutely. I mean, point being, as Gareth was pointing out in the comments to people who were getting a little confused, is that this isn't, while it's unusual for eBay, this sort of stuff was floating around a lot in the 80s anyway. Yeah, so it's not special in that sort of sense. I mean, that's still 30 years ago now, so not knocking it, but I can see why it's not a market that people are leaping at. Yeah,
I do think. I mean, someone may want it, even if they can't play it. It's something that like somebody would probably like to have on the shelf and just say, "Hey, this is an original film reel or whatever." And I understand that mentality. Not that it's something I personally would do, but I get that. At the same time, though, I would like to think that the person selling this reel has at least contacted the BBC just to see if their copy might be in any way a better version than mm-hmm. what the BBC has, because that happened to the BBC recently with, or fairly recently, I guess, with the War Games. You know, the copy that we had on VHS forever was the copy that the BBC had officially in their archives. And then, what is it, the BMI over there, I think they had a copy of their own. And they just, by chance,
BFI.
BFI, thank you, were showing it
not
to each other.
Not the body mass index.
There you go. and basically found that the BFI had a better copy. Their copy was either the master copy or just all around just a better version. Mm-hmm. So they were able to get us a better copy on DVD. So it might be nice if this person who is selling this would share it with the BBC if they have not already, just to say, hey, if it's a better print, you know, do what you need to with it, and then I'll sell it, you know?
Yeah. Otherwise, he should put on there, this is not as good a print as the one that you'd have on DVD. And that, I'm sure that would boost its sales dramatically.
Considerably, yeah. Yeah. A couple of things about eBay. I actually bought a projector on eBay. My dad's got an old, I think it's 8mm cine camera and projector. Which, you know, they're like 50 years old, the pair. And the cine camera doesn't work anymore. And he used to use it to film us when we were kids, you know, going to air shows and those things that people did in the 1970s, wearing flares, that kind of thing, and 80s. And he decided that he wasn't going to let me borrow the projector so I could convert them to VHS, to DVD, in fact, which just because he felt bloody minded. So I bought my own version of his self-same projector in better nick for like 20 quid. On eBay, which I'm always very pleased about. I've managed to get the exact same projector in much better nick. That's the first thing. The other thing is, dear listener, in my capacity as a security online security specialist, I would really enthuse to you the importance of changing your eBay and PayPal passwords following eBay's data breach recently. For which they still have not explained how it happened. There is a distinct risk of your identity being stolen. So please change your passwords. After that public service announcement, the possibility of Colin Baker in Star Wars. Have you seen this, guys?
Yes, mm-hmm. I did. On Casterbras, I did, yes.
Yeah, that's it's kind of mad in some ways. And wonderful, wonderfully mad.
Why?
I just think it is. Am I not allowed to say that?
It's being filmed in England, and you know, the original three had plethoras of English people in there as well. Sir Alec Guinness is he was in there, I think. Peter Cushing. The guy who played the commander on the Death Star, who was in EastEnders and Blake Seven and various
Leslie
other...
Schofield.
Thank you, Leslie Schofield. Couldn't think of his name.
Then another Doctor Who link, because he was in...
Julian Glover as the attack commander. Yeah.
Yes.
Should we keep rolling? Can we get any more Doctor Who links in there?
Warwick
Davis.
Dave Prowse.
Jeremy Bullock.
David Prowse. Who was the Minotaur.
Yes, and Jeremy Bullock, Boba
and
Fett.
Jeremy Bullock, Boba Fett.
Fett, sorry, and Archer Warrior. In the Time Warrior.
Hal the Archer, not Hal the computer. AI. No.
Yeah, no, that'd be an odd mix-up.
I don't remember his name, but there was the guy who originally played Jabba the Hutt. He was in Sea Devils.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Very good. Nice one.
I think Brian's just won the podcast, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yes. I can't think of anything quite as obscure as that.
There was talk of the Matt Smith, who, not content with dominating Doctor Who for 4 years, has now been cast in Terminator. There was also talk of him also being pulled into it. So,
Is Cumberbatch in it?
Not yet.
He will be. It's a prerequisite of every film these days that's been released in the summer. He's got to be in there somewhere. So I'm sure he'll be, a big AT-AT or something, stomping in the background. Who else was... what's that? Talking, you know, of acts in America, have you seen the trailer for the US Broadchurch?
No, not yet.
Yes.
You have. Brian?
Yes.
David Tennant's accent...
Slips.
What, What did you think of it in those small bits that you saw?
I did hear it was a bit weak, and maybe a suggestion was that it was actually Canadian.
You know, I can't say it was 100% terrible, but there were definitely points where, you know what the weirdest thing is to me with him, and I've noticed this a lot. I noticed this when Americans do British accents, and when a lot of British actors do American accents, you either get like, for instance, David Tennant, you know, in Doctor Who, he's kind of more high pitched, but in Broadchurch, he's kind of like, well, you know, I came here to do this thing. And yes. I'm going to do it. And you're just like, what? Do you really have to go deep and grovelly for your American accent? Like, is that necessary? But I don't know. It wasn't. I'll say it this way. It was better than Rex is your lawyer.
Rex is not your lawyer.
Whichever. It never. Rex is hey, not look, your, it never Rex made it to TV. US do TV I really pilot. Need to get a title right for that?
No, you do not. No, you do not.
There
well, you
go.
Know, the thing I noticed about Star Wars.
Yeah.
Reese, just today, I think it was. There's not many women in Star Wars, is there?
No.
There's kind of Leia, Mon Mothma in Return of the Jedi, and I can't think of any others.
Well, there's the girl who falls
into
the Rancor
pit. Oh, there's
Aunt
Beru as well. Aunt Beru,
yeah.
And the girl who falls into the Rancor pit, yeah.
But that's pretty much it. Yeah. Oh, there's the mature lady in Empire Strikes Back in the Rebel base who says, stand by, iron control, and fire, and shoots a Star Destroyer. I remember her. Oh, as well.
And I'm sure some of those Ewoks were women.
Oh, right, okay. Well, I have trouble remembering any of the people in the command center in Empire Strikes Back because there's that one guy from Fawlty Towers in there, and I'm always looking at him. You know, the Waldorf Salad episode.
No, I hadn't noticed that.
Yeah, he's the guy from the Waldorf Salad episode.
Well, it's the point is, it's true there is a pitiful amount of women. There's certainly a pitiful amount of strong women.
Well, the reason
types.
I noticed this was because Gareth Cavanagh linked to a really nice piece of animation, which may have been Biota King, who did that fantastic Doctor Who anime, of a Star Wars dogfight. And there was a female TIE fighter pilot, and I think there was a female X-Wing pilot as well. It's I'll link to that in the show notes. It's really worth having a view. It's very, very good.
Totally uncanon, then.
Yes.
Women don't do that. Women are a very selective breed in Star Wars. There's more aliens than women.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because it is very true. It'll be interesting to see whether they address the balance in the new. I'm quite looking forward to the new ones. I mean, I hated the last three, so I suppose when you've hit the bottom of the barrel, you always feel that the only way is up.
I watched the last three quite recently, and I was surprised to find that the Phantom Menace seems to be the best film of the three.
No, good lord.
And I'd never rated it, but watching them together, I had such a good time watching it. And the other two, I was.
The second one, I can't.
Pulling my eyes out.
I just get utterly bored in the second one. Yeah, and the third one is, third one's more cohesive, and you can see they've made efforts with the characters. He's obviously had some script help as well, but it's still a mess. And I don't know. Yeah, it's again, it's an example because I mean, to be fair, I mean, as many people have said, it's nothing new to say that, you know, the scripts for the original Star Wars are hardly mind blowing. But you've got it. Just reminds you how important it is to get a good cast. If you don't get the right cast, you could. Well, then say that. I mean, The Phantom Menace was absurd in the fact that they had two identical characters as a lead, two Jedi who were really not much different to each other. And that's there was nothing to bounce off. There was nothing to charge. Nothing to it. Just the story just floated on, and things like that were just absurd. So yeah, it is. I think it's exciting because I think it's got more chance of finding its feet this time. So I don't know
what you guys are talking about. I heard all these bits of news that finally, after I don't know what has it been 30 some odd years, a brand new Star Wars film is going to happen. Yeah. I'm excited. Yeah, I mean, I'm thrilled. What is this other stuff you're talking? I don't know. You're talking nonsense to me. I think.
Oh, I see what you're doing there. I see what you're doing there. No, that's very good. That's very good. I'm also kind of find interesting. We can parallel this a bit with Doctor Who. Is the sense that there's a mixture of relief and fury that, depending on who you speak to, that they've turned around. Disney have said that all the extended material pretty much is null and void. Now there's some fans saying they just meant the stuff after Return of the Jedi. Others are saying the whole lot. And again, it's just very interesting to see a show which they made an effort to sort of decide on canonicity. And then the mess it creates when you start trying to create that hierarchy than if you have Doctor Who, where there is no canonicity rules, really, beyond it being whether it's been officially sanctioned. And everything's just so much simpler. And there's,
that's the thing. It's a lot simpler. Like here's the difference. The main difference that I see anyway, with Doctor Who, you have a TV series where you can continue telling as many stories as you want since you brought it back. And you could make allusions to or nods to or even adaptations or references to books all you like, radio dramas, comic books, whatever you want. You can make them say a throwaway line that says, yeah, this happened, you know, however you want to do it. But with Star Wars, there's been all that expanded universe stuff for, you know, ever since, you know, whichever movie it all started.
Since
I don't even know when it started.
Three, yeah, at least. Mm.
There you go.
Maybe earlier if the comic started before that. I think
yeah.
Did,
but what do you have? You potentially have one, maybe three, and I know they're looking at a couple of spin-off movies in order to tell, you know, your adventures. And you kind of do want them to be something new, something to make people want to go see them. And I understand there's going to be some people out there that are going to be ticked off. They can't go see, you know, the story where Chewbacca dies or something ridiculous like that. Mm. But I like the fact that, you know, they're going to give us this new vision, this real vision. And in many senses, it's the way that I've always viewed things like Doctor Who and anything that has an expanded universe, which is looking at The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You know, no version of that series has ever been identical. You know, you've had the radio dramas, the books, the TV show, the movies, and then again, the continuation of the radio dramas. And it's great because, you know, you have different versions of it to enjoy. And when it comes to Doctor Who, I'd be very surprised, and maybe somebody will pop this in the notes, but I would be very surprised to find that somebody out there actually believes in every little last bit of expanded universe for Doctor Who, or even Star Wars. You know, there's always something that somebody says, no, that one didn't.
I mean, Doctor Who's very lucky that it has a catch-all, that it's time and time changes. So it is easier, I guess, for fans to sort of be able to dismiss Lungbarrow in the sense that, I mean, you've just had a massive time war. And to be honest, I was reading one archive which pointed out, and I'd forgotten about this, series five suggests that time again is rewritten where after the Big Bang. So some stuff again may not happen. And even before that happened in series five, there was a suggestion that stuff had been changed. Before that, you had the time war. So with everything constantly in flux, it is easier for Who fans to sort of turn around and sort of say, well, that did happen then, hasn't happened now, maybe it would happen again in the future. That's the flux of time. And so it's easy for people to sort of pick and choose, I think, out of Doctor Who. I think it's probably harder for Star Wars fans if you invest in the extended universe and then to be told, no, it definitely never, ever happened.
Well, Transformers fans have this as well. They get the same as Star Wars. It keeps changing in various ways. You've got the comic books, and although the comic books and the cartoons try to be quite close, you've then got the movies coming along contradicting everything every few years. So that causes them a massive problem. So you've got, this must be at least three Transformers universes.
I think, it is a problem for, I mean, the beauty of extended media is you get more of something, but it obviously becomes harder to connect it together. And I mean, with Star Wars, Lucas has gone record, so he hasn't even read in the extended universe, which I think is a bit of a shame, really. I like to think that, you know, you got all this
given
stuff
the people
out
that he gave permission to write it. Like, I'm thinking like big names like Timothy Zahn.
Well, that is it. And from
that's
my
a bit rude, isn't it?
Well, that's what I kind of feel. I mean, to be fair, I've heard, when the company I worked for was doing a Star Wars game, we were, he was involved in early processes. So I think it would be inappropriate to say that he has no interest, but I don't get the impression he has any interest in reading or seeing what actually is done beyond the point when it actually goes into production, whatever media it is, which is, I think is a bit of a shame. But again, I suppose that's where Doctor Who is good, is that we have no creator left actually to define, because, you know, Star Trek had the problem that Gene Roddenberry refused to accept the animated series as part of canon. And yet there's lots of little bits of Star Trek, which comes from the animated series, like James Tiberius Kirk was first mentioned in the animated series. And most fans tend to like to include it as a sort of series three, and I think it's actually probably worth it as well, but he refused. So when you have a creator, it creates these sort of blocks that perhaps, you know, don't necessarily chime with the people who are enjoying the product. It is.
Listen, just on the matter of novelists, you know, over the last few years we've had some massive novelists writing for Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
We've had Alistair Reynolds and Stephen Baxter, who were both massive sci-fi authors.
Yeah.
Is there any Do you have any favourite authors that you'd like to see writing Doctor Who books?
Well, I'd like to see, I know this is a really obvious one, but I'd like to see Terry Pratchett.
Yes, I would.
Given that Terry Pratchett has a very strong homage connection to Douglas Adams in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I also forgot Michael Moorcock in that list, but I agree, Terry Pratchett. Well. Brian, what about you?
Honestly, I don't.
Okay.
Yeah, I really don't.
It's okay, Brian. I'll just explain to the listeners that Brian can't actually read.
That's very true. I just like the pictures.
You can't read unless there's speech bubbles.
By the way, that was my, in case you guys can tell, that was my fake American accent. That's right.
Very good.
I was about to say, I'd like to hear, you know, I like the comic work of Paul Cornell, like him to do this. Oh, God, what am I doing?
He's Paul Cornell's writing the
Like, yeah, like, it'd be interesting to see what his book, if he wrote Doctor Who, what that would be like. I bet that would be interesting. Sometimes it's difficult. Cause I remember Pat Mills, who was a co-creator of Judge Dredd and of 2000 AD. He did one of the Paul McGann's the Big Finish Paul McGann once the BBC with Lucy, and it didn't blow me away. So sometimes I suppose a bit like Nightmare in Silver didn't blow me away with Gaiman. That sometimes you can have a great writer, but doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to fall in sync with the
production,
with the feel of Doctor Who. But there's other things that can affect it.
We kind of agree, didn't we, that Stephen Moffat nobbled Neil Gaiman with that episode?
Yes, I think there's
those
probably
companions.
There's a bit of truth there. But
okay, let's move on.
And Colin Baker, yeah, I think it's cool. I'm glad he is. Yes. If he is in it, I think it is nice. I think I think Sylvester McCoy will be very upset that he'll no longer be the movie one of five-ish Doctors. But I think it's good. He seems a nice guy. He's a good actor.
How do you see him in Star Wars? I see him as some kind of I see him as a rebel. Well, not rebel, a New Republic ambassador sort of character, a politician.
He could be a politician. Alternatively, I could see him. I know they're going to go back to Tatooine as some sort of dodgy dealer in Mos Eisley spaceport. I could see him playing that sort of Cockney British.
He may only be doing a voice as well. We don't know yet.
Yes, he could be.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Good point.
Could be doing a Greg Proops.
I don't know. I think the senator thing is a good bet, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
As much as I'd like to see him do something a little bit more interesting, I think he's got that kind of look to him, and certainly his voice lends very well to that as well.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to just have a brief chat with you, dear listener, about some changes to the Cast Overs news pages. We're pulling back on the news because largely we found ourselves falling into a strange trap of trivia. Over the past, certainly while Doctor Who's been off air, and possibly in the gaps between Doctor Who series since around series 6. So what we're doing, we're going to be giving you better content, basically. We're going to give you really, really well-written, interesting articles that you can get your teeth into and enjoy, rather than, as one of the news team pointed out, not, look, it's a bird type photo news items. So that's basically that. So we're going to be less news, but more news in a kind of less news, more interesting material for you to read.
You're essentially a riffing of BBC Three's online promotion, which is less programmes, more content.
Am I really? Oh, dear.
Pretty much, yeah.
Let's stop calling it content. Let's say really good articles and features and interviews and reviews. And we'll still be giving you the news probably to the same volume, but in singular articles. With more context and better images and videos.
Okay.
You're basically going to like it more, and you'll chat more, and we won't be giving you trivial crap. So that's about that.
That's good, because I don't like trivial crap.
No, I don't either. For instance, I think I probably noticed that we were in some kind of mad Doctor Who handcart to hell when I stumbled across a page of Doctor Who-themed swimsuits. And clicked to the little button that added it into the drafts so I could assign it to a writer later on. And when I came across it again later, I thought, Jesus Christ, we're not going to do this. What have I pressed that for? And it was then that I realised that we were maybe guilty of publishing stuff that you don't really need to know, dear listener. So there you go. And just while we're on the topic, next week we're hoping to have Gareth Kavanagh on Casterbris podcast with a K, and we'll be discussing fanzines and the issue of fanzines, Casterbris magazine issue 2, which will be out shortly, which is all about video games, and the topic of content on Casterbris are all intrinsically linked. You will be fascinated, I'm sure, to learn. Let's move on. Dominic Glynn, remember him? He's a musician, and he worked on the Doctor Who theme tune in the Colin Baker era. Now, am I right in saying this was just the Trial of a Time Lord arrangement?
I thought it was the series before as well, but
is it the series before? Just, I can't remember.
I thought
myself in at the moment.
I thought it was the two series, but okay. I could be wrong.
Well, he's
what, do you mean he wrote those two series, or are you looking for the particular the theme tune, that one arrangement?
The theme tune,
that arrangement. Did
it, was only, it was only for a trial. The other one.
Oh, really?
Prior. He had used the one that Peter Davison and Tom Baker had used.
Yes, you're quite right.
Yeah, they just changed the visuals on it. That's all. Like they made it a bit more colorful to match the Doctor.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, so Dominic Glynn has done lots of stuff. He's done Red Dwarf. He's worked on The Simpsons, and he's released. He's releasing a EP, the first new mix in 12 years from Syzygy, the underground electronica duo of Dominic Glynn and Justin Mackay, best known for their techno and ambient dance releases on the Rising High label. It will feature the version originally performed at the Gallifrey One fan convention in LA in February, now known as the, can you guess what it's now known as? It's now known as the Gallifrey One remix.
All right.
It's released on the 16th of June, and you'll be able to get it from No Bones Records on iTunes and on Amazon and Rhapsody. And maybe you might be able to walk into a record shop if you still have one in your locality and purchase it from that there establishment. There's a Doctor Who music is a topic we should probably address in far more detail in a dedicated podcast one time. We've never really addressed Trok either, have we? Time Lord Rock, for the uninitiated.
It's no, I don't believe we have.
No, I like to think that I invented Time Lord Rock around 20 years ago. I wrote this horrendous piece of music. Actually, no, the music wasn't too bad. It was the lyrics were just dreadfully, dreadfully bad. I thought I could improve on John Pertwee's. What was that track? Was it I Am the Doctor or Who is the Doctor? And I failed dismally. So while I'm claiming to have invented Time Lord Rock, I obviously have nothing to back that up, as unlike the people on YouTube who have done some wonderful things. Have you guys ever stumbled across any Time Lord Rock that you actually liked?
No.
No? Okay. Brian?
Yeah, actually, that band Chameleon Circuit, they have a couple songs on that one album. Well, I guess they only have the one album, as far as I know, anyway.
Okay.
There were a couple songs on there I thought were pretty good.
Okay.
One track in name, it was called Kiss the Girl. I liked the basis of that song, and it was about an episode, too, that
Isn't
I just didn't really
moment?
Care for. No, it was about the Lodger.
Okay, right.
And I just, you know, to me it was an okay episode, but the song was better, oddly, I found. I liked it, anyway.
Okay. James, your feelings about Time Lord Rock are clear to us.
Yes, I love it. It's trite. It's desperate. It's disingenuous, and it's just keep it away from me.
Okay. What if I told you? There's no truth to this whatsoever, mm-hmm. as far as I'm aware. But what if I told you that Kashmir by Led Zeppelin was actually Time Lord Rock?
I don't listen to Led Zeppelin. I find it disingenuous. pretentious. Just
you must know Kashmir then.
No.
You come on, you must know Kashmir. Kashmir's
one
that Puff Daddy sampled for the Godzilla soundtrack.
Right, I probably don't know that one either.
Right, okay. Moving on.
Screw the editor's segment up.
Yes. So we received an email, and we receive emails from time to time. My inbox is quite literally bulging every day, and the majority of emails don't get read. However, I did read this one, and it was from a chap called Paul.
Right.
Who has a... he doesn't have a dog.
Mm.
Who the hell's that?
Might be mine.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have a dog either, so don't
blame me. Okay.
Well, there you go, Sherlock. You've worked that one out.
Okay, so Paul emailed us. He's a PR chap. And he basically emailed us with details of a song from rock group called Space Elevator. The song is called I Will Find You, Gallifrey Dreams. And it's a love song to the Doctor. They have a lead singer called The Duchess, who is a big fan of Doctor Who. And she's convinced the band to allow the song to be exclusively downloaded free by four of her favourite fan sites, including Casterbris. That's us. So that's really nice. Thank you, The Duchess. Or Duchess. Not sure which it is. So we're going to just play you this song right now. So what do you think of that then, Brian?
Glorious.
It's very well done, professional. It's a nice quality thing, isn't it? You'd think it was I don't know. It could be.
She has a very nice voice, and they definitely yes. a very well polished recording.
Yes, nice edit as well.
It's very good. They're good musicians, that's for sure.
Excellent. Well, let's move on. We'll maybe talk about a general kind of spin-off Doctor Who rock thing in a future podcast at an undetermined time that we've yet to be bothered about.
Well, to be fair, I did a song and I did it based on Twin Peaks. So
did
I
you really?
I've got, yeah, I did. But it was very, the lines
oblique.
Were very subtle. Yeah, didn't want it to
be
obvious.
It would have to be, wouldn't it?
But it was inspired a lot by Twin Peaks. So yeah, so I suppose can't be too hard on Trock, as you call it. Anyway,
yes. Well, there's the Harry Potter thing as well, isn't there? That's called Rock, with a W, Wizard Rock.
So, oh, good Lord.
Yeah, that's where it started. Maybe there was Star Wars rock called Strock.
I think... Honestly, the only thing I have to say is I think a song about a particular genre is a fun thing because there have been plenty of fun ones. As a matter of fact, I mean, while this one's not about a genre, it's about the actor, but they hit on the series. Bree Sharp's David Duchovny. That was a great song. I thought I really enjoyed that one. But I don't know if it needs its own listing, its own genre of music. I think it's just kind of more, hey, we wrote a song about Doctor Who, you know. I think that would be more fun. Plus, it would free your band up to kind of have a heck of a lot more to actually write about and sing about, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, you know, we sat here being really well, not being rude at all, are we? We sat here discussing someone else's music and as if we've got kind of our own music that we could show off.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, it's a hard thing. I mean, it's music is subjective to taste. I mean, I think I do like the fact that the internet, the social media that we have today allows people to just sort of platform very strong creative bundles, whether it's your type of music or not is another thing, but it allows you to enjoy whatever it is, whether it's you know, quality stuff like that, or if, you know, like Brian being a big fan of Chameleon Circuit, you know. It just depends.
Do you know, I haven't recorded anything in 14 years.
Wow, yeah. Since, well, it's been a long time
Since I last put a track down, 14 years.
I don't know, how long is it for me? I think it was...
it's been 12 for me.
2002, really? So 12 for me as well.
I thought it would be sooner for you, Brian.
Okay, wait a minute. It was 12 since we did our, quote, album. You're right. It's probably been at least 9 or 10 years because I did a couple of tracks specifically for my dad. I wrote a song about my grandfather. Uh-huh. So I recorded those later. Yeah. So maybe 9 or 10 years for me. Surprised by
that. I have a feeling that my son seems to have a slight leaning towards the musical.
Nice.
He's a keen drummer. And he's got a little guitar as well. And he likes my guitar. So. That may be something that changes in the future. Oh, quite exciting now. Okay, so now then, it's we've mentioned Gareth, haven't we? So it's recommendations time, guys. I'm going to ask you two esteemed podcast co-hosts who do very little hosting unless I'm not here, which things you would like to recommend this week?
Which thing would we like to recommend this week? Do you know, Christian, that is a very good question.
With some sort of Doctor Who link.
I am glad.
Better than sitting Who next link. To
See,
Doctor
now you're
Who
making it even easier for me.
Oh, well, that's good.
With a Doctor Who. You haven't made it easier.
Oh. Okay.
I'm just saying. Okay. Actually, you know, well, okay. I've been kind of in other things. I've been watching a lot of the Marvel series movies lately, so they don't really have a Doctor Who link.
What have you been watching?
I started with Iron Man. I watched Iron Man 1. It's mm-hmm. been a while for that, and that one is a tremendous film. I'd forgotten how good that one was. I knew they were always good, but I'd forgotten how good it really was.
Great soundtrack, too.
Yeah, it's really good. I actually do like the soundtrack. I'm sure you'd be happy to know. I will, you know, I'm going to recommend movies that are in the theaters currently, because I have recently seen Captain America, The Winter Soldier, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, and X-Men Days of Futures Past, and I would recommend every one of them, because I enjoyed the heck out of all of them.
Really? So, I've heard Spider-Man 2's had a bit of a rollicking in the box office.
You know, it may have with the numbers, but the thing is, everybody's kind of, they kind of rag on it because it's not the original series, number one, and they you know, have attachments to it. Some of them rag on it because, you know, with any comic book movie, if there's any mild deviation of any kind, you know, which again, try and cram 50 years worth of stuff into a film, it's just not going to happen. You know, I don't know what they're complaining about personally. I think I had maybe like one minor thing that I could talk about in this new film. I enjoyed it. As a matter of fact, my girlfriend and I went to see it twice. We saw it right before we went away on our vacation. And once we got back, we were like, want to see that again? Yes, please. So we went. Okay. We really enjoyed it. All of them, all three of them. But yeah, I love the new Spider-Man series, both of them.
I watched the first one for the first time a few days ago. I say watched, I didn't watch it. I got up to the point where he goes to Reese Ifans' house.
Right.
I forgot the name of the character. Reese Ifans is the scientist, Brian, who we know who he is. I just don't want to spoil it for James. And I just couldn't get... He just didn't feel right to me. It was really annoying me that I really, really wanted to like it, but I found it slow. Most definitely, but a little bit frustrated by that. So I don't know if I'm going to try it again sometime.
The first film has a slower pace, but I have to say, I think the first time I saw the first film, I felt kind of the same as you. It was a bit of a slower pace, but the second time that I saw it, I felt like no time passed at all, rather time passed perfectly well, I guess I should say. Yeah. It was, I don't know, both of us, Ariel is not, she was never really like big into Spider-Man, and you know, she had watched the Tobey Maguire movies and a couple cartoons and so on, and you know, she likes all these new Marvel movies, but she was really, it was odd. It was very hesitant for her to actually agree to watch the Spider-Man movie with me because of how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And when we watched the first one, she just loved it. And when we went to see the new one, she's the one that wanted to see it the second time. Not that I didn't, but she's the one that actually was like, should we go see it again? You know, she loved it. But I have to say the second movie does have much better pacing. Mm-hmm. I think what got the first movie with their pacing was they had a storyline, they had a plot line that thankfully they decided to drop. So they had to edit the film and remove those kind of bits. And I think it did mess with the film's pacing. But on second viewing, it's one of those things we talk about with Doctor Who episodes. On second viewing, I really feel that it passed a whole hell of a lot better and was just a lot more enjoyable to me.
I'm certainly going to give it another go. I've also got First Class to watch as well. But I'm intrigued that you've recommended all three new Marvel movies. That's impressive. James, what are you recommending?
Well, let's see. I've not seen any of them. I want to see the Days of Future Present. I suppose past. Kind of past. Yeah. Well, in the comic books, it was present as well, and all sorts of mad stuff, wasn't there? I want to see that. I'm quite interested, just from a purely cinematic point of view, how it sort of pulls together, given that it's now pretty much the longest running superhero franchise, which is continuing in the same continuity with all its holes. It'd be quite interesting. But what I will recommend. Is all I've been really watching this week is the Life on Mars. I've been rewatching again, which obviously has quite obvious close connections to Doctor Who, and still really enjoying it. And I don't know, there's just something so horrendously watchable about that show. And John Sim is good in it, and the feel is right.
And... the supporting cast is really good, and I think they get, I don't think they get a fair recognition for it, to be honest with you.
The support, the whole cast is good. You're right, yeah. And that makes it. And I think also what makes it is the fact that when it was, depending on what sources you read to when the writer said at whatever time, you get this mixture of it was always Life on Mars was always meant to be in his head, to the other side of it being Life on Mars was always this idea that it might end up being what it ended up being at the end of Ashes to Ashes. And so you can watch it with that sort of secondary knowledge. So trying to sort of fiddle it in your own head, because even the ending of Ashes to Ashes still was very vague to how it would all work. Yeah. So there's loads, and as I say, because it wasn't definitive all the way through, there's loads of things there which does deviate from the idea that was given in the end. So you can sort of watch it, so trying to pull it all together into a sort of internal logic in your own head, which is always a lot of fun when you're watching stuff retrospectively. So yeah, I mean, I've just been watching that and just thinking, yeah, that was a damn good series. I think. In one sense, I think Sim was a fool not to do a third, which I think he's said in the past, more recently, that he wishes he'd done a third. At the same time, if they'd done a third, you wouldn't have had Ashes to Ashes, which I don't think was ever as good. But yeah. It did mean you got more content. It depends on what you liked. I mean, I thought Sam Tyler was a very strong character, and Keely Hawes took a time to, as we've said before, I think, took a time to sort of find a place in it. Yeah. So Life on Mars, and I think I'll probably go on to Ashes to Ashes, and I'm going to be watching The Visitation, I think, this week as well, so that'll be okay.
Did you see From There to Here on Thursday night with Philip Glenister and Liz White?
No.
It was Liz White played Annie Cartwright in Life on Mars. Yeah, I didn't see it either, but it got some good reviews, so I was interested.
Well, she's very good in it.
She's very good. Well, she was a Woman in Black, wasn't she, as well?
Oh, right. No, I didn't realise that.
Yeah, she's a very good actress.
Yes. I mean, there's disputes over whether she was... I mean, writers say that they were going to bring her back for Ashes to Ashes for an episode, and then apparently she's said that no one contacted her. You know, it's that same sort of thing. Yeah. But again, yeah, I mean, I love the show. I mean, I've been looking at a couple of forums of joining just to talk about it, but I read the comments and they jar with me already. Because you get a lot of... The funny thing is, isn't it, that, you know, The Ashes to Ashes, you should have seen it by now. You know, can't dance around this too much. But with the whole idea of it being so gene-centric, and yet you get these forums where you feel that that's the same sort of thing, that there's a sort of spider in the middle of these forums who thinks they know everything and defies everyone else's opinions. And you're tempted to go in and just challenge them. And at the same time, you're thinking, it's just not worth the time. It's not worth the time. But
do you know what I would like to... I would really, really... Wait. I don't care. It doesn't have to be dubbed. I can put up with the subtitles. It's not a problem. I really want to watch the Russian version.
The Russian version.
I really do. Because I've 1970s, you know, communist-era Russia.
Yes.
It's really fascinating time. You know, we didn't know anything about what was going on in Russia in the 1970s, did we? You know, the only relationship the British people had with the other side of the Iron Curtain was through... James Bond movies and episodes of The Professionals with East German agents trying to bring down the British government and all that kind of thing, and, you know, The Third Man and all that Kim Philby business. So to actually find out what life was like in the 1970s in Russia is really, really interesting. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, I think to a certain degree, I mean, I think Life on Mars was quite good in that sense here. It's, okay, we know what it was like, and we know, but it's, you know, for our generation, which sort of was born sort of in the middle of the 70s, but was too young to understand it, it is quite interesting to see how, to see it in that sort of retrospective stuff. I mean, obviously you can watch the scene, it's a screeny, and see it in a sort of very contemporary light of the time.
Yeah.
But you don't have that retrospective angle of juxtaposing policing now to then. So, I mean, yeah, I love Life on Mars. I'd love to talk more about it and, you know, the intricacies of it on a podcast, because I think it's a fascinating show. But, yeah, I'd love to see the Russian one for exactly that reason. I'd never considered that. That's a really good point.
Okay. Well, I've got a couple of recommendations. I'll keep mine relatively brief.
Yeah.
Had a nice pair of books arrive for me. Now, the first one I have had a read of, and this is one I would seriously recommend. The other one's a BBC book, which we'll come to in a moment. You're probably going to buy it anyway if you're into buying Doctor Who books. Because it's a BBC book and it's got Doctor Who written on it. But the first one is 50 Years in Time and Space, A Short History of Doctor Who by Frank Danes. It's completely unauthorised. It's from St. Mark's Press. We're talking about 290 plus pages of Doctor Who history. But Frank Danes is a Doctor Who fan, and he's got his opinions and thoughts and recollections. So it's, I've quite a bit of a soft spot for this. It's like a decent version of Ultimate Regeneration that covers 50 years instead of 5 years, if you will. I would buy this book if I hadn't already been sent it. It's that good. It's really interesting to read. Frank has some nice thoughts about things, some of which I agree with, some of which I don't agree with. His recall's pretty good. It brings it into some nice context. You believe that the guy has been watching Doctor Who for all those years. He's not just like pulling something out of a listings magazine or Wikipedia. He was actually there and he remembers watching it, and he's got some nice context that adds into those. So buy that, please. There will be a link in the show notes for that. The second book is been sent to me from BBC Books. If you follow us on Instagram, you will have seen the photograph. It is the Shakespeare Notebooks. It is... I still can't quite get my head around what it actually is. Drawn from recently discovered archives, the Shakespeare Notebooks is the holy grail for bard scholars. Conclusive proof that the Doctor not only appeared throughout Shakespeare's life, but had a significant impact on his writing. And it then proceeds to be various... it's proc, basically. No, that's not right. No, it's troetry. Yes, it's troetry. Troetry. It's Time Lord poetry, essentially, and literature. It's a curio. But as I say, it's got a BBC logo on it and a Doctor Who logo of the official variety, so you'll probably buy it anyway. It's just a bit of fun, really. So that's that. That concludes my recommendation. Does anyone have anything to add to this week's podcast?
Nope.
I think that's it from me here, sitting here.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm glad we got that sorted out. So, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have any comments or thoughts on what we've discussed in this week's podcast, please feel free to tweet us at CastOpusDW or leave some comments at the bottom of the post. And I'm pointing, even though we're not on camera today. And you can also comment on Facebook. Or if you're shy, just email me, christian@castopus.com. If you like cosplay, email Brian at castopus.com. Which brings us to the end of this week's Castopus podcast with a K. As I say, so until next time, goodbye.